The Bible study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary. And it's your turn. It's Ask the Pastor with open phones, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And you can email the studio with questions and comments, KFUO at KFUO.org. I've got the inbox open here. Correspond with us. Participate during Ask the Pastor on the Bible study underwritten by Concordia Seminary. And our guest today is Pastor Alan Shade at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in St. Charles. Good morning, Pastor Shade.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, doing fine. Good to have you with us. It's unofficially summertime.
And well, with these temperatures, it's pretty close to official.
I guess school's over there in St. Charles.
No, we have extra days because we had so many snow days, so
we are in
now our last week of school.
Will that affect Vacation Bible School? Did you have to push that off a little bit?
It had already been scheduled, so it's set for the third week of June, so we're still okay with that.
Is that still a vital thing going on during summertime for the kids? Do they attend pretty good?
We've been blessed with a very good children's ministry outreach, and this year especially, and it's a pretty exciting thing because they work at making it not just a repeat of school classroom kind of setting. They do outreach kinds of things to hit people of the community that may not have a connection with Emmanuel. And it has formats that the kids get involved with and are very active in their learning too. So it's a wonderful ministry.
Do you attract some children from other denominations?
There are some folks, of course, that use VBS as a way to keep the kids from getting bored during the summer. So they may do three or four through the summer, and in that sense. But others are come back because they know the program over the years, or they have relatives in the Emmanuel, and their kids participate with us, and we're delighted to have them.
Do you get involved in that?
Some of my responsibilities don't allow a daily thing, but usually everybody on campus is involved one way or another with VBS. Just with supportive families or welcoming or contacting or taking a part of a day's program or helping with a VBS closing service or something of that nature.
You're in not only a very large but a very active parish. What are your duties there at Emmanuel?
They've shifted. I was administrative pastor, and we've been delighted to welcome Pastor Scott Schmieding as our new senior pastor. And I've moved over to what we call care ministries, which picks up what would be under the aegis of elders and some evangelism, although Pastor Schmieding is really gung-ho in that area and very outreach-oriented. I do some with social ministry. I'm sort of connected to the school because I have great love for the school, so I try to help with welcoming new families and connecting with new families that are coming to us through the school.
And apparently you really embrace that social ministry, and that's why you're doing it.
Well, the need has been incredible over the last year with the number of disasters that have hit internationally and locally. So people are much more sensitive to it, and they're looking for ways to be directly involved with that as well. So, again, Pastor Schmieding's got some neat ideas about how we're going to be involved in trying to help Emmanuel Joplin and their school and then some of the families that have been impacted in the community. So we expect to have some folks traveling down there in the near future when they, you know, get it coordinated so that it's part of the long-term support that they're going to need.
Did you have a connection before the disaster?
Not directly with Emmanuel and Joplin, other than sharing the name. But those are coming, and we're trying not to overwhelm them, but be available to help as the long-term needs come on stream.
Sounds like you're very intentional about evangelism there at Emmanuel St. Charles.
Well, with Lindenwood University and a changing and vital community and just the nature of local communities really changing significantly, a lot of the attitudes toward organized religion have been altering in mindsets, and we live in a very busy community, so a lot of times people are just running at such breakneck speeds that a little peace and a change of pace and a chance to sit down and do some reflection on the Word and will of God are significant options that they really do need, and we try to help them in any way we can.
I came from a different tradition, and when I began to get interested in attending a Lutheran church, I attended what was called an inquiry class. Do you do things like that at Emmanuel St. Charles? Do you have inquiry classes?
The titles change over the years, but we do that three or four times a year. Ours will start a week from Wednesday for the summer series, but we run that probably four times a year just because we need we have lots of different folks coming and asking questions, and that's a great way for them to have an opportunity to fit their questions into the larger picture of what the Christian faith is all about. I end up doing a lot of private ones simply because people's schedules are so difficult that, you know, we run into a nurse that works every Saturday and every Sunday, and she can't do what we would normally do, so we put them in when we can and meet with them privately to try to catch them when they're excited about it or when the moment is right, but meet their needs as best we can and support them in their search.
How would you structure leading someone into your church? Do you make distinctions between whatever the other the person sitting across the table from you had, whatever their tradition was in the past, or perhaps they didn't have any tradition?
Well, the ones with no tradition benefit the most from the regular inquiries class because it goes over the basics. We start with it's you know, Christianity 101, in that you introduce them to what the Bible is, and you introduce them to what the Trinity is, and you introduce them to who Jesus is, and then work through there for some of the more substantial questions about what does it mean to be church, and what are sacraments and commandments and those kinds of things. But a lot of times when you have them one-on-one, you meet them where they have been. Some of them are inactive Christians. Haven't been in a church in 10 years. Some of them are disenchanted with a denomination that they were a part of for one reason or another, or they had a bad experience, or they blame somebody for a bad experience, and then you have an opportunity to try to redirect them. And some of them just were so overwhelmed with life that they wandered away for a while, and then the Lord allowed them to kind of have a moment of realization that life was flying by and they weren't focused on the things that were really important, and then you rejoice that they connect with you so you can share Jesus and a hope for eternity and the strength they need to face each day's challenges.
I can remember seeing the chalkboard, and across the header it said Roman Catholic, it said Protestant, and it said Lutheran. And then underneath the Roman Catholic it said Bible, Tradition, and Reason. Under the Protestant, it said Bible and Reason. And under the Lutheran header, it said Bible.
Yeah,
is that a fair distinction?
Well, it's still an important one because we often start that first class with finding out what people's backgrounds were or are, and then asking them to think about the question of authority, because I sit there and say, I'm going to say some things to you, or we're going to read some things from the Bible that are going to come straight at you and say, this is what the truth is. And then you're a product of a lot of different influences in your life, some conscious, some unconscious, that are going to resist that. And then I use the things like that as illustration. Roman Catholics come and they have the Bible as part of their background, but they have tradition as part of their background, and then they have the official orders of the church that can dictate what teachings there are. You know, a lot of people come now and they either have reason, that's the modern generation, they don't accept anything that's unreasonable, and then you have the postmoderns that are very open to all sorts of emotional things, or they're open to relativism in terms of anything and everything might be true, or it might be true for you but it's not true for me. And I warn them that they're going to have claims from the Scripture about the one and final authority of God, and that they will wrestle with that, or I'll challenge them to wrestle with that, so they're not doing that unconsciously but consciously.
And perhaps it's even beneficial for someone who was raised in your church to come back from time to time to see those distinctions, so they can better understand the religious world around it.
Well, think of how many things that if you were operating on your memory of what you thought you learned in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, mm-hmm. and were trying to do that, you know, let's we'll look at how I was out this morning driving into and back from St. Louis and looking at the way people drive and thinking, I'm absolutely certain they were not taught to do that when they took their driving class, but they're operating with all sorts of other things that make them make their choices or act unconsciously. And a lot of the times the best questions in our adult instruction classes come from people who have had that rootage. They come back and now their fiance or somebody new in the family is needs to take the classes, and they're taking them along with them as kind of a support thing. And suddenly they have these questions that are coming, and they're going, wow, I hadn't thought about this, or I didn't realize we believed that, or do we really teach that still, or something of that nature, and a light bulb goes on, and fantastic learning. It's great dynamic for an adult instruction class, because you have people with no background who are just hungry or don't even know what questions to ask, and others that have had troubles in their life, and they've come back looking for something that they desperately need, and others that are just have come out of a church where the gospel has not been predominant, and you're trying to introduce them to grace and love and forgiveness, and a God who is committed to their well-being for time and for eternity. It's phenomenal kind of experience.
I guess it's stimulating for you too.
Oh, adult instruction class, or the we call it starting point class. That's the most fun I have in all my ministry. I mean, I love doing a lot of different things, but that class is far and away the most fun to do. I come home more pumped after teaching that than almost anything else I do.
And perhaps sometimes there's a little debate going on there too.
Well, yeah, and that's part of the energizing, because you get you have people that are ready to say, well, I don't buy into that, Pastor. Why should I believe that sort of thing? Or how in the world can you say that? Or you really expect us to believe in miracles, or you expect us to believe that all of sin came into the world through two people, and then you're able to show them some of the great and powerful chapters from Scripture, and let the Word talk. You know, they're not going to argue with me. Let them argue with God. And oftentimes, what the insights that God gives at that point through His Word, they have never thought of before, and suddenly they're having insights and flashes that are just profound and powerful and wonderful, and to get to watch the Holy Spirit doing that kind of thing in people's lives is just unbelievably joyful.
Pastor Alan Shade at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in St. Charles. Herman, you're on KFUO's Ask the Pastor with Pastor Shade.
Thank you for taking my call. Pastor Shade, you mentioned the practical challenge you face of trying to have a pastor's class that matches all the aggregate of people's varied and busy schedule today. You know, that's quite a challenge. Also, in the inquirers that you're getting, among them, are you finding any from the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America who are doctrinal refugees seeking a more biblically authoritative and assertive church?
We were actually expecting a little bit more folks to come from that after the unfortunate things that developed in the ALCA in the last year and a half or so. We have had some, and they were very specific about the issues that they had just recently gone through and needed to find a place that was more biblically grounded. And we have others that came from there, but what we thought were the issues were not... they were more peripheral, and there were other things that caused them to seek us out. But it's been a place where we've tried to be sensitive to people and the hurt that they've had. If you can imagine having been a member of a congregation and having good friends and close friendships with people, and you've worked together and you've tried to accomplish some of the Lord's will, and then suddenly your church is moving away from you, and the grieving that they go through, it's been an inordinately challenging kind of thing to respond to.
Yes. Do you see in that response of those particular people that the numbers have been steady, or they've gone up or gone down on that regard coming to you?
We have not had significantly larger numbers here, but I haven't talked to a lot of my brother pastors in the circuit about that specific issue, so I can't speak with authority on St. Charles County. Just our numbers have not blossomed that large that we would have thought that it was like a wave of individuals coming. Unfortunately, I'm afraid that many of them have just kind of hunkered down and decided to do their own thing in their congregation. We have some friends that we've known over the years, and in their congregation, by and large, they have a very faithful pastor who is not teaching some of the things that are in the official practices. So they have supported that pastor, and they have tried to avoid some of those other things, so that their congregation is not fractured or destroyed. Now that's difficult because, on one hand, they don't stand up for some aspects of the truth that they need to, but their decision was, we're making a difference in this local community by trying to be as faithful as we possibly can and downplaying the connection to the larger church body and simply focusing on what they share in their day-to-day. That's a decision I couldn't do, but that's where they ended up, and I think that probably is not an untypical kind of reaction.
Well, I certainly thank you for your insight.
Thank you. God bless.
I would imagine folks in that situation feel like orphans, like they've been abandoned.
We had that already. I was in Ontario in the 70s and early 80s when a predecessor church body to that was doing some of those kinds of things, and we talked to some pastors from what was then the LCA, and they felt that way too. They were, you know, a few years away from retirement, and their whole church body had gone in a direction they never thought would have been possible. And yet to leave their church body just a few years before retirement seemed enormously difficult to do.
And perhaps do some new members come from a church that put them off in some way? Maybe one of the parishioners said something wrong, and they got angry, and they just quit going to church and decide to come back?
Well, the difficulty there is you realize for everyone that you can welcome from another church, there's probably somebody who has left your church for the same reason, because the pastor did something or failed to do something. Or
well, I heard a story yesterday from a lady who was checking out a church in a municipality, and she wasn't from that municipality, and when one of the longtime members, this woman found out she wasn't from there, she said, "Why are you here? You're not from here." And that was the end of that. That lady didn't come back anymore, that new member, potential new member.
It's a frightening kind of thing, because there are some times when we are well-meaning but say inappropriate things, and other times when we're just flat insensitive to new folks because we've thought a certain way or done things a certain way, or we like the closeness that we've developed with a certain group of people within our congregation, and we feel threatened by somebody coming in from the outside. So.
Is it possible to host a church etiquette get together like you would an inquiry class, a church etiquette class?
Well, you try to get those things into sermons and announcements and a variety of communications about the importance of welcoming the visitor and thinking about what it would be like to be a visitor. But yeah, I'm amazed at times of how many people have never been to a different church. They have not gone through the experience of being a visitor in another parish, so they don't think about what it would be like for a visitor to come. Or we occasionally used to use some of the seminary students that are field workers to come in and pretend to be visitors, and then give them a few things to do, and then to gauge the reaction that they received from people as they came in, and that was sometimes embarrassing to think what they experienced. It was a good experience for the seminary students to realize what can happen to a prospective visitor or prospective member, but it was painful to think what happens to some of our visitors as they sit in the pew or in the chairs by us.
Pastor Alan Shade, it's Ask the Pastor, and the phones are open at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Roland, you're on Ask the Pastor with Pastor Alan Shade.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
we traveled through, we go to St. Louis to pick up groceries, and we traveled through Columbia, Illinois, and at the old Ford dealership, there's a sign along the road that says Faith Lutheran Church. Is that a part of the Missouri Synod? It's called, I've heard stories that there's a satellite church where you go and there's no pastor there. You're watching a video or somewhere else he's preaching and you're seeing it?
I'm not familiar with that location, particularly because it's over in Illinois. But that's not an uncommon thing now where congregations are trying to launch daughter churches, and they use the language of a satellite church because they will have some staff there on Sunday morning in that facility, but when it comes time for the preaching of the sermon, that pastor would be in a different location and there'd be a satellite link, so that he would be in his home pulpit that Sunday and he would be available there by video, and then somebody else does the rest of the service. So you might have musical leadership and a seminary student or lay training or an associate pastor that conducts almost all of the service, but when it's time for the message, that's one pastor that might preach to two or three or four different satellite locations.
Can I ask you why? We have a church in Columbia, Illinois, the church, Missouri Synod. What is that?
And to give you more context, Faith Lutheran Church in Oakville has launched this satellite delivery system to Edwardsville and to Columbia, Illinois. And it's new and it's different, Pastor.
Well, some of it goes back. In one sense, I find it frustrating to have to try to be all things to all people. But in another sense, I realize that some people are not going to be comfortable coming to a liturgical service and sit in hard, uncomfortable pews surrounded by stained glass that does not have a significant meaning to them. And there are churches that are trying to reach people who would never come to a traditional setting for worship. Now, when you start something like that, you always run the risk that you might be undercutting ministry or keeping another church from adding new members in a more traditional fashion. But there are just so many people who will not come to that kind of setting that we're trying to find ways to reach out to them and remove some of what could be barriers. Now, your long-term hope is that they will connect with a family of believers and contribute to the support of that ministry. But there are more and more obstacles and more barriers, and where the church has to continually look for other ways to make that happen. Now, hopefully there are good relationships between the one church and the church that is trying to do a new ministry, but occasionally I'm embarrassed to say that sometimes congregations that are challenged to do outreach in their community don't do it, or they insist on doing it only in one certain way, and that leaves walls up to lots and lots of people. In St. Charles County, 55% of the county is unchurched. So, and in most cases, traditional kinds of ways of having those people get into worship are not going to be appealing. So they're trying to cross some barriers, not change the gospel, but trying to cross some other barriers in ways that will give us an opportunity to do face-to-face ministry with
Roland,
them and share Jesus.
Roland, thank you for the call. Apparently it's a matter of preferences, and perhaps we'll return to that topic when we come back from a break on Ask the Pastor on KFUO Radio.
I've heard business people complain that nonprofits don't respond in timely ways to needs and opportunities. I believe that's true. Concordia Seminary strives to instill responsiveness in our graduates. Responsiveness to the needs of congregations and responsiveness to the needs of our communities and world. Responsiveness is a seminary core value, and it's a great commission value.
Becoming a day sponsor is a great way for you to support the ministry of KFUO Radio. You select an available day, and your day sponsor announcement will be heard 5 times that day. Customize your announcement to honor a friend, family member, birthday, an anniversary, whatever you want. Celebrate your special day while supporting the ministry of KFUO Radio. Contact Joan Harwell today here at the station and tell her you want to be a day sponsor. Thank you in advance for your prayers and your support of the worldwide ministry of KFUO Radio.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The Girl Scouts has been getting more unfavorable media attention lately regarding their promotion of abortion and a promiscuous lifestyle. This time, it's from an unexpected source. Two teenage sisters who were longtime Girl Scouts. They left the group because they disagreed with the often repeated link between the Girl Scouts and Planned Parenthood. This organization does more than promote and provide abortions. It aggressively advocates a promiscuous lifestyle in secret, apart from parents, that puts young girls and women at risk. The Girl Scouts claim they don't take a position on abortion, but the young sisters, Tess and Sydney Volansky, have developed a website with documentation. If you'd like more information, visit today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
The President's Fervent Prayer. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. President Barack Obama says America's fallen heroes answered a call like that heard by the biblical prophet Isaiah.
When I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send? And who will go for us?" And I said, "Here I am. Send me."
In a ceremony at Arlington National Cemetery, Obama said Memorial Day is a time to celebrate love of country, brotherhood, and sacrifice.
It is my fervent prayer that we may honor the memory of the fallen by living out those ideals every day of our lives.
Command Chaplain Colonel Steve Barry, in his closing prayer, issued a biblical admonition to
resist evil to the uttermost, strengthen the faint-hearted, lift up the oppressed, defend the helpless, honor God, fear no man. Above all, love and serve the Lord. Amen.
I'm Steve Coleman.
Let's say you're a mom and you want to put on the perfect birthday party for your twin daughters. So you get a clown and he dazzles everyone. And you order a cake and have the bakery put something nice on it.
Happy birthday, girls.
And you hire a pony to give everyone rides. And it all goes perfectly.
Best party ever, Mom!
And you're the perfect mom. But even if it doesn't go that way, and your clown doesn't dazzle, and the bakery doesn't spell out the right message,
happy birthday, Gil?
And the pony doesn't give everyone rides, it can still be the perfect birthday party because kids don't always see things the way you see them.
Best party ever, Mom!
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of siblings in foster care who'll take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org.
It's Ask the Pastor on the Bible Study. Pastor Alan Shade at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in St. Charles is our guest today, and the phone's open at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Roland sort of ignited a lightning issue here, and that deals with identity. It seems like there's two ends of the spectrum, my way or the highway. Every church should be the same within this denomination, and then there's that other end of the spectrum, find out what the marketplace wants and fulfill the need, and you'll have customers and you'll have successful evangelism. Is there a delicate balance between those two extremes?
Well, the difficulties that we deal with are that, on one hand, we have no right nor any desire to change the gospel and the scriptures. So one of the tests that still remains valid is the product that we're delivering the gospel of Jesus Christ strictly according to what the scriptures have taught. The second question then, and these are sometimes all portrayed as though they are opposites, but they're not. It's like saying, well, if you like ice cream, then you must hate green beans. Well, not necessarily, but I want the pure gospel, but I am sensitive to the fact that the delivery process is going to change over the years. I suspect Walter E. Meyer had a few detractors when he started preaching the gospel on the radio that was going to bring people out of the churches, and they would just stay home and listen to the radio. Mm. But he realized that was a way by which he could get into the homes of people, and I struggle with that. We struggle with it at Emmanuel, because even to try to design a worship schedule, some people only want to worship Saturday night. Some people only want to worship in the sanctuary. Some only want to worship in the fellowship hall. Some don't want a certain style of music, and some don't consider a church unless there's a certain style of music, and things of that nature. And you're always trying to try to have people be a little bit more tolerant of things without compromising the reality of the gospel. So, but people draw lines in the sand, and for a variety of reasons. I mean, we've all heard the old jokes about people being asked to move because they were sitting in somebody else's pew when they came on Sunday morning, and there are a lot of variations on that still trouble us. And most of us that deal with this have to realize that occasionally we're going to have to stand up in front of people and say, you know, I thought this, but I was wrong, or I tried to do this, and I didn't do it very well, and I apologize, and I ask your forgiveness, and please help us to move on. But our uppermost concern is to communicate the gospel with as many people as we possibly can, because the night comes when no man can work, and I want to work while it is day.
Is there a role for some churches to serve by catering to people's preferences stylistically?
I suppose the word catering is going to also raise some hackles on the back of people's necks, because it almost has a tone that says you're going to package things in a way that people find palatable, and does your package in some way contradict the message that you're trying to convey? I remember discussions that we had with church denominations or church groups that removed crosses from the front of their worship, where they didn't want to have a cross, not because they stopped believing in Jesus, but because people that came in found a cross offensive. And then you have passages in the scriptures that talk about we are determined to know nothing among you save Jesus Christ and Him crucified. So occasionally the line that we think separates between content and delivery system is not a line that actually can be drawn. They become so intimately woven that you are doing something you ought not to do. But for the most part, the pastors that I've talked to on this are people that genuinely want to find a way to communicate with American Christians that are not in any saving relationship with Jesus, or have had some impact that caused them to not want any connection with organized religion as they know it, and they're trying to win them back for the sake of their eternal salvation, and they're going to take some risks. And whenever you take risks, you're going to make mistakes. We struggle with this. Risk taking sometimes becomes like an excuse to do anything and everything you feel like doing, just because you think it might work, and then you can come back and say, well, they need to be more accepting of my risk taking, and you can fall off the tightrope on either side of it that way. Paul was a pretty significant risk taker. The reading from Acts last Sunday took on the Athenian people in a very creative, untraditional way, but Paul found that it necessary, because that was the opportunity that he had to share the gospel, and he honed directly in on the important essentials, the Christ of the cross and the reality of the resurrection to people who didn't believe in resurrection of the dead. So the focus stayed very sharply clear on Jesus Christ, and he was willing to be criticized or maligned for doing some things that might not have been accepted in every circle. And the reality too is that some of us change, and we change at different rates. We don't all adjust to new circumstances and new things rapidly, and we need to be sensitive to the fact that for some people that change is going to be painful, and we have a ministry to them as well as we do to others.
Well, let me role play here, if you don't mind. Let's say I'm in your inquiry class, and I'm working for an ad agency. That's my line of work. And I asked Pastor Alan Shade, I say, Pastor, how would you brand your church? What is your brand image in an age where perception's everything?
That's a legitimate question, and it's one that we have struggled with, and we actually have people that are addressing pretty consistently over the last 10 years. We've mm-hmm. looked at the issue of identity on that. Now, the jargon of branding will come and go, I suppose, but the issue is still there. When people ask me what is our core and what are we all about, we are a church that creates disciples for Jesus Christ through a commitment to Christian education from the cradle to the grave. So we know we're a church committed to school and to training young people and supporting families by raising up children in the context of families that are followers of Jesus and lifelong students of the Word. So we kind of know what our DNA is, and what we can do, and then sometimes that helps us say, well, we'd like to do that, but we really can't do that because it's different from what we're created to be. Now, of course, the challenge comes when you're in a community where the whole community transforms so dramatically that you can't be what you've always been, and then there are really, really difficult questions to ask and sometimes different answers that come up. But fortunately, for 160 some years, God's allowed us to be that kind of church and school here.
Yeah, and what about in the next zip code, the Lutheran Church there? Would it have the same brand as the perception of Emmanuel?
Well, there are several other congregations in the St. Charles area that do very similar kinds of things, but there are some that are dramatically different, some that don't have schools, some whose DNA is very different from ours, and I think that's great, because when a visitor comes to Emmanuel and they say they're looking for a new church, I say, well, I'll sit down with you over a cup of coffee and we'll find out what you think you need, and maybe I can help direct you to the congregation that would be most effective for that, because we're all different. You know, Orchard Farm Trinity is a wonderful congregation, but it's not the same as Holy Cross O'Fallon or Messiah in Weldon Springs or Zion in Harvester or Emmanuel in Wentzville. We are wired together in part because of the circumstance and community in which God has placed us, but we all have that common core that the Scriptures and the Lutheran confessions are our key focus.
Would that detract from the entire denomination's brand image, or can it complement it?
As long as the gospel predominates and everything that we do clearly is rooted in the proclamation of Christ crucified and the solid commitment to the Scriptures, I think the branding variations are useful and helpful, because my goodness, think back to what we were 150 years ago and all the different ethnic groups that came to the United States and all the different things that made up a part of theirs, and they tried to help them say, well, it's one thing to be a different ethnic group, but it's another thing that you're now living in the United States. And then your church is to reflect those realities. You can't just be your former ethnic background, and you just can't be American, because, you know, not everything American would even be endorsed by the Scriptures. But you found a way to stay true to the gospel and to the Scriptures as you dealt with people coming from a wide variety of backgrounds and wide variety of philosophies of life and attitudes toward what even a church is supposed to be.
And perhaps, Pastor Shade, you'd remind me that deciding which church to go to is not like buying a car or a tube of toothpaste. There's deeper things to look at.
There are. Well, that's a problem in modern America, because I'm sure I'm going to offend somebody, but modern Americans tend to be really shallow. I mean, they will choose their church or decide things of that nature for what I would consider all peripheral reasons or things that are not going to be significant over a long period of time. But our responsibility is to meet them where they are. I can't assume that when a person starts starts an adult inquirers class, I can't assume that he's a mature Christian. And that's contradiction in terms. Why would he be in an inquirers class if he was already a mature Christian? So I have to take them where they are and try to lead them and fill their hearts and their souls and their minds with the central teachings of the Scripture. But I can't presume that they will already have a behavior level. You know, if somebody walks in and I say, now, if you're thinking about coming to this church, you have to be able to sing four-part harmony in our hymns, otherwise we can't let you worship with us. You know, that's preposterous. You kind of take and then you lift by the virtue of the gospel. And sometimes people's reasons for coming to an adult inquirers class are they're virtually pagan, or they're very self-centered, or they're borderline in terms of even being acceptable. But, you know, if I get them there and have the opportunity to teach them about Jesus, I'm honest with them. I'm not trying to deceive them. But we talk about things in a way that challenges them to go from borderline or inappropriate motives to truly sound motives. And it's not uncommon to have somebody say at the end of a class or 6 months after they took the class to say, you know, when we joined, this is where we were. But fortunately, what we've learned and what Emmanuel has taught us is of much greater significance and much more focused on Christ and the cross and resurrection. So, and that's a great feedback to hear.
Well, I'll give you a case in point about how shallow decisions can be. I have a sister-in-law in Kansas City who was going through a tough time in life. She was raised Methodist, and she fell away from the church, and she decided it was time to go back to church. She needed some help, and she needed a haven. So she chose the closest church to her house. And it's an Assembly of God church, and she says the people are nice, so she keeps going. But I asked her, I said, well, what do they think and believe? And she said, oh, I don't know, they believe in God. And I just stopped there. But what should we be looking for?
Well, the more mature a person is, the more they are going to focus their search on, is the gospel preached according to the Scriptures? Are the sacraments administered faithfully to what the Scriptures teach about baptism and Holy Communion? Is this a place where my faith is going to be strengthened because I'm going to be fed the Word of God regularly in the preaching and in the ministry and programs of the church? And is it a place where I can use my gifts that God has given to me to minister to others and to build up the body of Christ? So it's marriage-like in a sense that you expect to receive, but you also expect it to give. You know, gospel-centered response to what Christ has done. And in that sense, you know, sometimes there's a disconnect, because people will come for, you know, in the 50s, people joined churches because it was an entry into the country club sort of thing. And sometimes they wanted to be seen with the right people from the community, or people drove the right kind of cars, you know. And then more recently we've had, because they have the best parking in the city, or they have the best music program in the city, or they have the best children's ministry in the city, or, you know, any number of kinds of things of that nature. We can all be very, very shallow and very selfish in why we choose what we do. So,
Pastor Alan Shade, phones open at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Faith has a good question for you. Hi, Faith.
Hi, Paul.
You're on KFUO.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning. Sometimes when we talk about different styles of worship or whatever, we tend to kind of think of the participants of these different churches as being far to one end and the other one being far to the other end. And that is disturbing, you know, to me. I belong to St. Paul's in Columbia, and I also have friends who go to Faith Lutheran Satellite Church there. And at our church at St. Paul's, Pastor Tice gives a wonderfully, wonderfully Bible-based sermon. We always do the liturgy. And it is, of course, scripturally based. and that's wonderful, knowing that, and very faith uplifting. We also have a blended service once a month, and it's great, too. Our young people are involved in that. And I just got back from a trip from Latvia, and we were in the Jesus Church in Riga, and it was, of course, very liturgical, but what we noticed so much was the intensity of the people around us when the Agnus Dei was being sung. The older people especially came streaming down the aisle to make it to that communion rail. And then everybody else walked up behind them. So we had rows and rows and rows and rows and rows. There's a big area between the first pew and the communion rail. We were all standing around the rail and waiting for the older people to finish their tables, and then the rest of us went up as well. And as we turned to go back to our pews, there were the older people kneeling on the hard floor on their knees, you know, thanking God for the ability to worship as they wanted to, because since 1991 now, Latvia is now free from the domination of Russia. So I really think that even those people in the United States who are kind of shallow, perhaps, as you said, Pastor Shea, they need to know this. They need to know why we're there, why we go to church. They need to know the so-called tradition. And as far as the DNA goes, you know, I don't even know what that means. And I guess that's my question. What do you mean by DNA?
Well, can I ask a question first, Faith? You said you had some friends that went to the church across the street, Lutheran church. Why do they go there instead of where you are?
Well, they had been going to Faith in Oakville.
They've been driving across the Jefferson Barracks Bridge and all the way to Oakville.
It's not all the way from Columbia to Oakville. It's probably about
I make that drive. I bike ride over there. But that's interesting. So then, did the church justify itself being there because they're moving to where the people are to save them the trip?
I think so, and I think that's what they're doing in Edwardsville and also down in Miami. I believe they have another satellite church down there in Miami or somewhere in Florida, one of the major cities.
Well, it's interesting. Pastor, could you respond to what Faith's been talking about?
Well, she covered a number of different areas. First of all, I'd affirm my appreciation for the value of the liturgy and the historic liturgy and the meaningfulness that it brings to so many people. And the joy that I have in participating, particularly with the Eucharistic liturgy and the meaning of it. But, you know, the question that has surfaced is, and I think she suggested it, is that there are many who understand it well, but others who have been doing it for a long, long time but have lost their connection with the meaning, or we have not done a good job of teaching it. We teach the liturgy so that they can participate in it, but we don't always go the next level to build up their understanding of the deep meaningfulness of it and the connection with historic roots and so on, so that sometimes we're going through the motions without the depth. I think when I talk about DNA, I simply mean that when God brings a group of individuals together, they do not always have the same sets of gifts. You may end up with a church that has a huge heart for social ministry, but is not strong on Christian education. Or you may find a group that are strong on fellowship and they connect beautifully in small group ministries. But they may not have an interest in certain other kinds of things that other churches just think are things you have to do to be a Christian congregation. So when you bring 12 different people together, you have 12 different sets of gifts, and they do what they're strong at. Or think about pastors that you've had over the years, that one pastor may have one set of gifts, and he was a very strong people person, but may not be so good on organizational aspects. Or he may be a great preacher, but he's not a strong leader, different ways. And those kinds of mixes impact the personality and the style and the growth of the congregation. And over the years, they have a significant impact. So sometimes that means some people will be connected and attracted to that church, and other times they may not feel a kinship or connection with it because their gifts differ in that way. So not only do individuals have unique sets of gifts, but I think congregations often do that as well. And it enables them to serve differently in a community, and means we can have two or three or four churches in a community and all have effective ministries because they're all doing something to meet needs and legitimate needs in the lives of people in that community.
May I say something else?
Oh, please do, Faith. Go ahead.
First of all, in our bulletin, we have the Bible verses that respond to each part of the liturgy, which is wonderful. Secondly, our pastor does an excellent job, even in the service, you know, pointing out what the different parts mean. And he does it often, and it's wonderful to have that continuous education or a teaching there. And another thing, if you do have different churches that have different emphases, wouldn't that be kind of shallow? Being a member of one of those churches, wouldn't that be kind of shallow in terms of what you're really being fed or taught? Or
I'm hoping that all of those churches preach the same gospel very clearly and very faithfully from the scriptures. But it means that not every congregation is going to be able to do everything that a different congregation can do. So,
well, that's how we feel about our pastor. He has his own faults, but we appreciate him and he asks for help. My husband often preaches for him at different times during the year, especially during Lent and Advent, simply because our pastor becomes exhausted during that time, and we understand that. So I think that these churches that are only doing one type of thing, I really think that they really need to think about talking about doctrine and also
Well, I'm hoping doctrine is one of the things that every congregation does. My little summary would be that every church needs to be involved in worship, in fellowship, in service, in nurture, and in outreach. Those are automatics. Every congregation needs to be doing those basic functions of every congregation. And their different gift mix will allow them to do them in different ways. But oftentimes congregations are going to have a strength in a certain area that another congregation won't have that, or they'll develop some unique ways of reaching into the community. And, you know, there was a time when I think we kind of approached things and said, well, somebody in Synod will come up with a program, and if every church would just go and copy that program, they would be great churches. And I think we're much more of a mind now that, well, some churches will be able to do that really effectively, but others will have to find a different way by which they make their connections with the community. But
thank you so much, Pastor Shea. I really do appreciate
your
question.
Help.
And Faith?
Thank you.
Faith, are
yes?
you glad your friends are going to church?
Oh, yes, I am.
Good for you.
I am.
Thank you, Faith.
God
blessings
God.
To you. Pastor Alan Shea, thank you.
My pleasure. Glad to connect with you. God
Very
bless.
Very good. Tomorrow on Ask the Pastor, we expect a second coming. Pastor Don Matzett returns to KFUO Radio tomorrow for Ask the Pastor. Spread the word. Ask the Pastor on the Bible study underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.